It's Your Health, a podcast brought to you by the Health Desk here at NPR. I'm Rebecca Davis. This week, genetic testing. What would you do if the person hiring you for a job said, "We're just going to take some of your DNA. It'll help in doing a background check." Would you feel like, "Look, I've nothing to hide. That's okay." Or perhaps something about that request just doesn't sit right. Well, there is a new federal law that protects genetic privacy. So now health insurers aren't allowed to use genetic information to make decisions about the insurance you get or what it would cost. And as Joseph Shapiro reports, similar restrictions now apply to employers. He has this story.
Last month, Matt Williams, an adjunct professor at the University of Akron, opened an email from his bosses about the school's new rules for hiring.
I clicked on the link to the rule and was absolutely blown away when I saw the reference to collecting DNA samples.
The university was saying it could ask new workers for a DNA sample to run background checks. But Williams knew his DNA could also be used to discover the most private of information about his health, like his genetic risk for cancer, heart disease, or mental illness.
I don't want to say necessarily that the university had any malintent per se. The problem is, if the university is maintaining this sort of information on its employees, the temptation to use that information is simply far too great in the future.
To Williams, it was one more insult in the hard life of an adjunct professor, so he quit. A spokeswoman for the University of Akron says the policy was proper, but that it's now under review. Susanna Baruch of the Genetics and Public Policy Center at Johns Hopkins University says the school's policy seems to violate the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, or GINA.
Most generally, GINA prohibits health insurers and employers from using your genetic information against you to discriminate against you in providing health insurance or in making hiring decisions and firing decisions and all the other things that employers do.
There are a few exceptions. The law doesn't apply to employers with fewer than 15 workers, and while it covers health insurance, it doesn't apply to life or long-term care insurance. It took over a decade to get GINA through Congress. Baruch says since then, genetic medicine has gone from an imagined frontier to scientific reality.
Genetic medicine is expanding dramatically. So, for example, there are genetic tests available that can give you an idea of your increased likelihood of developing cancer. And once you have that information, you can do things to minimize your risk. You can pursue more preventive or early detection kind of care and really increase the chances that the cancer won't affect you.
For some medicines, there's also testing to see if the drug will even work for an individual, if it will cause side effects, and what amount is the most effective. But until now, Baruch says, people passed up genetic testing that could have helped them. They kept information hidden, even from their own doctors, because they had reason to fear that genetic information would be used against them.
Alleviating the fear was one of the primary purposes of GINA, so that we would all benefit from these advances in genetic medicine rather than having to hide from them.
Now, says Baruch, patients and employers need to be educated about these benefits and about the new law. Joseph Shapiro, NPR News.
Learning about your own DNA can bring with it painful information and tough decisions. Michelle Trudeau has this story of one man who chose to have his DNA tested for a deadly disease.
Charles Sabine has been a correspondent with NBC News for 25 years, covering every major war, armed conflict, and disaster during that time, winning an Emmy and other journalism awards for his television reporting. Then, 4 years ago, Sabine took a genetic test that told him how he's likely to die from a devastating genetic illness called Huntington's disease.
Nothing that I've experienced compares with that test in terms of the terror that it inflicted on me.
Now, like all genetic stories, this one begins at least a generation back with Charles Sabine's father in 1994.
When we discovered that he had something which I had never heard of, in fact, most people had never heard of, something called Huntington's disease.
A progressive, fatal disease that destroys a person's nervous system. First, Sabine's father lost his ability to walk normally.
It looks like someone is drunk, but in fact, of course, they're not. They're just simply exhibiting the problems with the motor skills that are the early symptoms of this disease.
Within a few years, he'd lost all his motor control and his ability to speak. His mind declined into dementia. Huntington's disease is incurable and essentially untreatable, but it's even worse than that.
The worst part, of course, as far as my father was concerned, was that he was effectively going to pass this on to my brother and I. So my brother and I both had a 50-50 chance that we too would develop this disease in ourselves.
If either son had inherited the disease gene, and a blood test can determine this, then he will inescapably get Huntington's.
And that would happen most likely in our 30s or 40s. And at that time, my brother was in his late 30s, I was in my early 30s, so it was devastating news for us.
Sabine's brother, then a successful lawyer in England, decided to get genetically tested right away because he had four children and wanted to know what lay ahead for his family. The test revealed the worst. He had inherited his father's Huntington's gene. Soon, symptoms began. First, the jerking arm movements, the drunken walk, and since, a progressive downward slide. He had to stop working at 42 and is now entering the advanced stages of Huntington's. But Charles Sabine, for several years, did not get the gene test, did not want to know, not until 2005.
I reached a point in my mid-40s when I decided that I needed to have the empowerment of having that knowledge because I wanted to make decisions about having a family, relationships, and having children.
So Sabine left Baghdad, where he was covering the war for NBC, and flew to London.
I have also now been tested. And I too now know that I will be taken by this disease as well.
For a long time, Sabine kept his genetic test a secret from friends and family, not telling his mother for almost 3 years, knowing the grief the news would cause her. She'd nursed his father throughout, at one point breaking both her wrists, lifting him out of the bath.
And she buried him with this disease, and she is now going to bury my brother and then me, most probably.
Huntington's usually starts in middle age. Sabine is now 49. He says he hasn't noticed any symptoms yet, but...
Not an hour goes by when I don't watch myself for symptoms. Every time I take the dogs out for a walk, I wonder if this is the first time that I'm going to trip and my coordination has started to fade.
In early 2008, Sabine and his wife made the decision to have a child. Today, they have a 17-month-old baby girl.
And her name is Breezy, and she's very beautiful. And she very happily does not, I happen to know, have the Huntington's gene.
While Sabine no longer does any news reporting for NBC, he does work exhaustively to get word out about Huntington's, giving lectures, drumming up research dollars, volunteering for genetic studies.
I mean, I wouldn't say anyone can be a television correspondent and go to Baghdad, but more or less anyone can do that. Not anyone can do what I'm doing now. And it just struck me that there was nothing else I should be doing for as long as I can do this. I will do this because it serves a much greater purpose. So while I can still put a sentence together, I shall go and do my bit to talk about this disease and raise awareness about it.
All toward putting a human face on this genetic disease that afflicts an estimated 30,000 individuals in the U.S. and their families who care for them. For NPR News, I'm Michelle Trudeau.
When seniors of Lincoln University graduate next spring, as many as 24 could be banned from taking part in the ceremonies. Michelle Norris explains why.
The historically black college in Oxford, Pennsylvania, says it will withhold diplomas from obese students who fail to meet a new requirement for all undergraduates. The school requires any student with a body mass index of 30 or higher to take a fitness for life, health, and nutrition class. The enforcement of that requirement has caused an uproar on campus. The university so far has stood firm, insisting that the measure sends an important message about battling obesity in black America. James DuBois is chair of the Department of Health, Physical Education, and Recreation at Lincoln University. He says the university has an obligation to promote healthy lifestyles on campus.
We know that obesity and its comorbidities are going to rob individuals of quality and quantity of life. What good is it to go through college, get your bachelor's degree at Lincoln University, go get your graduate degree, work for 5, 6, 7 years, and all of a sudden you experience a catastrophic health issue associated with the obesity? That would be a tragedy. So we again believe that it's just our professional educators' responsibility to alert students to this.
A lot of people on campus, even members of the faculty, say the school has completely overstepped its bounds here. They say that this is discrimination, pure and simple, and it seems like they have a point.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me back up a little bit. Colleges test, they assess. A test, by definition, does discriminate. It separates out a particular attribute. If we choose not to do this, what is the solution? People can say, what you're doing at Lincoln University is wrong, it's mean-spirited, it's evil. Okay? That is not addressing the problem. The faculty said that this is that important that we're going to take the hits, we're going to take the criticism, but we have to stand tall. Tell it like it is. Are we going to be criticized? Absolutely. But we have to do what is right.
Now, some of the students say that the university is culpable in some way here. They point to the food that's served, for instance, in the dining hall, and they say that the university does not always offer the healthiest of choices when it comes to the menu.
Right.
Do you bear some responsibility for the people who've put on a few extra pounds while they've been at school?
Certainly, it's a question of what's the opportunity as far as foods. And Lincoln, again, as an HBCU,
it's an isolated campus.
It's isolated. That's true. Lincoln, as an HBCU, is underfunded. All HBCUs, as far as I know, in my 35 years here at Lincoln, have been historically underfunded. How do you keep costs in line? Unfortunately, one way to cut is that you have food that is going to probably be less costly. Healthy foods cost more. That's a reality.
But it sounds like you're saying the university does bear some responsibility here.
We are who we are. We live where we live. Yes, there are certain things that you cannot control. Absolutely. But some of the things you can, and they're the ones we're trying to embark upon as far as changing.
So just to go back to those two dozen seniors who might not be able to march across that stage at the graduation ceremony, do they still have time to enroll in this class?
Absolutely.
If they just started showing up, they'd be able to graduate.
Absolutely. The course is offered in January. We're finishing up our fall semester in 2 weeks. The classes begin in early January, and we will get those seniors in those HPR 103 classes by hook or by crook, and the opportunity is there for them to take it. And they complete that course, it's not a problem.
Well, yeah. Dr. Du Bois, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Michelle.
James Du Bois is the chair and professor of the Department of Health, Physical Education, and Recreation at Lincoln University in Oxford, Pennsylvania.
And that's all for Your Health. Please join us again next week for more from the Health Desk here at NPR. I'm Rebecca Davis.